From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we go to Moscow and the Russian Federation and speak with political analyst Mark Sloboda about this past weekend's elections for Russia's parliament. Mark, welcome back. A pleasure to have you with us.
Don, thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you on CPR.
Thank you. The same, of course. And let's get right to the heart of this. What's up with the election? We are speaking on Monday, after the 20th, after the three-day election period in Russia for representatives to the parliament, the Duma.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we just had parliamentary elections in Russia. This is basically the equivalent of midterm elections in the United States.
Okay.
I'm working off of the exit polls, which have always been pretty reliable in the country. The official results won't be out for a few hours, at least, possibly into tomorrow. But I think that because the results so closely align with pre-election polling, both independent, government, international, towards support to the parties, that I think these results are pretty safe to say they're kosher. They're not going to change much.
So let me be real clear on this. So in terms of polling, you're talking both the official polling and the native polling agencies within Russia, and also like the U.S. and European and Japanese and Korean, the polling from outside by the private corporations that do that stuff here or their affiliates.
Yeah, especially. There are several polling agencies in Russia. There's, you know, the government polling, which, however much people may complain about, you know, just the government in general, the government polling has always matched up with just a couple points between, you know, say the independent international polling. So there's never been any substantial reason to question their polling, despite prejudice.
Despite the fact that they do anyway, right?
But I always operate off of Levada polling, checking others, of course. Levada is nominally independent polling in Russia. They are declared a foreign agent in Russia because they have received funding from the West. Okay, so they're quote independent, but they're not really. What they really are is opposition polling.
Right.
They are polling by people who don't like United Russia, who don't like Putin.
Right.
But their methodology is usually above board, even if their questions are often a little skewed and their analysis is complete garbage.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For anyone listening.
Against the government, right? But if you use the opposition's numbers, then you can't really. And so that's what I like to use, at least as a double check on everything else.
So
it all lines up.
On this point, just while we're here, this is something that we were stressing during the 2016 election, looking at polls here in the United States, and that is that when someone says polls, first of all, you don't go by what the newspaper reports or whatever characterizations of the polling results are. And you also don't go by just the executive summary. And you also don't go by the narrative that explains what the poll is and does. What you do look at is the methodology that was applied. And then you look at the raw data yourself and apply the methodology and see if you come out with the same conclusions that others do.
Yeah.
Because the difference is nothing but interpretation is subjective. The objective are the other areas that I just mentioned, the other two areas.
And when you are assessing the results of election, you should take a look at pre-election polling. You should take a look at exit polling, and you should take a look at the final results.
Right.
And if those results are within 2 to 3 percentage points of each other, then you have no reason to really doubt the overall quality of the election.
Yep.
And that really has always been the case in Russia. So I get a little, the Western media definitely has an agenda and a narrative to decry the results of elections in Russia that keep Putin in power because he's a big foil to them. Now, when the U.S. was helping Yeltsin rigged the 1996 election in Russia and was quite proudly proclaiming on the cover of Time magazine, "We helped Yeltsin win the election."
Right.
And most people assess that it was largely a rigged election. Right. Yeltsin coming from behind to defeat the communists, the whole goal, you know, being to prevent the communists from winning, and coming back to power, you know. There's no concern there about Russian elections.
Right.
When that was when you really should have had concern for them.
Right.
But now, so these parliamentary elections in Russia. Okay. So
wait, one last point. Just one last point on the vector between exit polling and official results. The State Department guideline is, well, it's multi-tiered, but at the 15% point, if there's a vector of more than 15% or more from the exit polls between the exit poll and the official result, they don't recognize the election at all. Like, that is a no-no. And for those listening, in the 2016 primaries, the primary elections that Hillary Clinton won, some of them were in excess of a 30-point vector between the results.
Wow. I did not know
just
that.
So folks know that.
That's interesting. Anyway, so okay, so in the last 10 years, parliamentary elections in Russia have been tweaked a little bit. So the way they to review the way they're conducted now is the parliament is elected on off years from the president, like a midterm election. The parliament has the Duma. We're talking the lower house of the Russian parliament, the right. Duma. There's 450 seats, and half of them are proportioned by the party vote, party list vote, right, which is proportional representation, and there's a 5% minimum threshold.
Right.
At the last few years, there have been four regular parties in the Duma for the last decade. United Russia, right. The Communist Party of the Russian Federation, coming usually in second.
Right.
The Liberal Democratic Party of Russia of Zhirinovsky, which is not right. Liberal, not democratic, not really a party. It's a cult of personality, and he's a Trumpian blowhard.
Right.
And soft nationalists. Right.
Right.
And then the fourth party is a fair Russia or a just Russia, depending the way that you translate it, Spravedliva, which is essentially a social democratic party.
Right.
And they usually come in just above the threshold.
Right.
And then the other half of the vote is by individual mandate, more like US elections, right? Where right. you have individual people that you vote for in certain districts. And that is where often parties that are not one of the big parties that can't cross the 5% threshold, then get some people into the Duma. So you could have, representation of the four or however many major parties, and then, probably like four or five other parties with a few individual candidates.
Right.
But the one thing that stands firm in Russia for, well over a decade now is liberals can't get elected.
Because there's not very many of them. There's not that many of them. That's why.
They've got very minimal support nationally, right? It's right. less than 5%, definitely. Navalny in particular, less than 2%.
Right.
And, Moscow is the most liberal city by far in the country, with possibly 18% up to 20% support in the capital
right.
compared to the rest of the country. But they're just really not popular enough. And the question is why, of course, because the people remember the 90s and the economic catastrophe of the Yeltsin era, which was worse than, the Great Depression on an economic scale in the United States. So
right.
that's still very fresh in people's
minds. They suffered through it for all that. Let me just punctuate something here. Imagine that Jill Stein, who had probably more votes than anyone, at least since Ralph Nader, for the Green Party in the United States in the last election, with like somewhere around 1% to 1.5% of the vote, decided to organize the Capitol occupation, the Occupy Capitol that took place on January 6th. How much time do you think he would do in prison? And this is Navalny has done these things with the actual intent of overthrowing the state. He's doing it in coordination with U.S. intelligence people, funding from abroad and all of that. That's why he's in jail, and they give him like 6 month terms and such. It's not like he's in gulag.
Actually, that's not why he's in jail.
Well,
he's actually in jail.
This is an analog
violation. Yeah, the terms of his suspended sentence and the fraud case brought by the French cosmetics firm Yves Rocher.
Right.
But now, if you want to say why is his so-called anti-corruption foundation and his political team Navalny, now why are they banned in the country?
Right.
Yes, that's because he's an open Western asset on top of all that.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, right. No, the other thing is for parole violation, actually, which is exactly right.
I mean,
right.
There are legitimate terms that he should be arrested, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
But even if there wasn't that, you're right. I think he should be locked up for being, an open Western asset with, the executive officer of his Ashurkov, of his anti-corruption foundation, caught on video, asking a British diplomat and known spy for millions of dollars to arrange protests and quote unquote propaganda, and then asking for British intelligence to get him dirt on Russian government officials to use against him. And that guy was then given political asylum in the United Kingdom, which is where he is now, continuing that, being published as a completely above board guy on the pages of the New York Times, and elsewhere, in the British press as well. And Navalny has never once addressed the fact that, the guy is still actually in his position. He hasn't been removed as, the operating director of operating executive of Navalny's so-called anti-corruption foundation.
Right.
And it's just something that's ignored in the Western press. They don't talk about it. Right. Yeah. You show them the video and they're like, I don't have anything to say. they just don't talk about it. I mean, it's a code of silence. We don't talk about things, right? Navalny is our asset. He's our guy. Yeah, he's a far right ultra nationalist and a populist and an opportunist and has a long record as a fraudster.
They call that a resume at the CIA. Okay, they call that a resume.
Level, but he's our guy. Yeah. He's our guy in Russia. So we don't say anything bad about him or acknowledge that whole thing. But anyway,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Navalny wasn't in this election, even though he does have a kind of ethereal presence in it, right? Before the election, this is the second time they've done this. This is now being done by Team Navalny. They call it smart voting, or as I like to call it, smart scam.
Right.
he says the most important thing is to beat United Russia. I don't care,
right?
He's like, I'll be happy to see the communists back in power if it means beating United Russia. Okay, I'm like, I don't have anything against the communists personally. I do have a problem with Navalny, and he will vote for the nationalists, LDPR, the soft nationalists. So he identifies all the races that he says that United Russia is most vulnerable to losing in the individual mandate sections.
Right.
And then he says, vote for this guy who's we identify as most likely to win so that we can take out as many United Russia people as possible.
Right.
But then, with all of his 2% approval rating in the country, if those communists or nationalists or whoever else does well, then he claims victory. They won because of Navalny, right? That's really a victory for Navalny. Navalny would have won that election if he had been allowed to participate. This is the type of nonsense that they feed you. Here's the reality. Navalny's negatives in Russia are so high, right? We're talking in the 70% versus 2% approval that I believe that actually that first of all, I don't believe all of his voters would even vote for communists or soft nationalists.
Right.
Some of them certainly not those nationalists. They have a different type of ethnic nationalists.
Oh, yeah. Whole different.
So I don't believe that they would all – I would say maybe half of them would follow those instructions. So let's talk 1% of the support in the country right there.
Right.
But, idea that that these candidates will only do well because of Navalny is nonsense, and you can see that quite clearly by taking a look at the polling leading up to the election before Navalny Finally, smart moding is announced. And it has to be said, the Russian government did pursue it widely. Yep. That the app was banned by the Russian Election Commission in Russia because Navalny and his people are considered an extremist organization, meaning they're a Western asset. And this was all done to destabilize the election, if you want to call it, in American press terms, an attack on Russian democracy.
Meddling.
So doubt and make people doubt, you know, the outcomes of the election system. And this is a lot more substantial, and the Russian government has complained about it. And then they went after Google and Apple and Cisco and Cloudflare for going around the going around the order and trying to give people access, and most of them caved in last minute. But anyway, I don't believe it actually has any effect on the election. I think it's a lot more people that people would vote more people would stop and say, I don't want to vote against this guy simply because Navalny wants him to win because his negative numbers are so high there.
Right.
But
I would have voted for this guy except seeing that Navalny supports him. And the hell with that. 8 out of 10 probably thinking that way.
Okay, so let's talk about the election. I've seen some numbers. I believe the turnout was above 50%.
Right.
Some 54% final, which is pretty good midterm election, if you know, in the United States. Last was the biggest midterm election in U.S. history since 1914 because of the Trump effect. But usual turnout in a midterm election or the congressional election in the U.S. is about 35%. So turnout in Russia is pretty good. Again, we're working off of, exit polls, but they're pretty good at this point. By the results, the Communist Party, the second biggest party in the country, did considerably better than the last few elections. They gained some 7 to 8 points on the national party list vote. And United Russia was the biggest loser as a result of that. Their numbers have also shrunk by close to 7 to 8%. However, they did extremely well in the individual mandate. Because let explain this, because there's not just two party system, right? It's not just Democrat or Republican. There's about four or five major parties and then many other smaller parties that are, candidates from and also independents running in these election, and the vote gets split several ways. So it doesn't, if United Russia is winning close to 80% of the individual mandate seats, it doesn't mean that they have 80% across the country. It means that they have consistently around 35-40% support, and that's more than everyone else because the individual mandates, like U.S. elections, are first past the post. So if they get 35-40% and the next highest candidate gets 20, they win. That's it, right?
Right.
There's no runoff in these cases and so on. That's why they tend to wipe up these individual mandate seats and do so well on them. So the end result is that on the party list, United Russia is going to finish with around 45%, it looks like, which is, again, about an 8-point drop from the last election. But they will do – they have done extremely well in the individual mandates, that is – going to net them just above 300 seats in the Duma, which means that they will retain their supermajority, right? Being able to on their own make changes to the constitution, right? As long as everyone votes party line, but the communists did better, and they'll have a higher representation in the Duma. They are pulling around 18%. They will possibly 19. They will have a bigger presence in the Duma, and they're trending up. And the main reason the communists are trending up, they've actually been trending down for a few years, but between the last election and this one, the United Russia, the government, the parliament raised the retirement age in Russia to almost American Western levels,
right?
Retirement at 65, and it had been 55, right? Lower for women. And Putin had at one point years ago promised that he would never do that. There are a whole lot of economic arguments about economic competition with other countries and your seniors. And then there's, you know, quality of life arguments saying we should be able to retire earlier. I have my own opinions on all of this. But the majority assessment is most people didn't like the idea. They don't like the idea. And that is why you are seeing an increase in the communist votes. The communists were against raising the pension age. And United Russia is paying a price. As a relatively small price, considering what a big deal it was, and it was Putin basically going back on his word, even though it was actually done by the Duma. You know, we all know Putin had to sign off on it. There's a cost to pay for that. There is a, you know, political capital has been spent. Soft nationalist LDPR finished with around 7.5%. That's close to a 5-point drop for them.
Right.
Pretty substantial, which I think is always good because I think Zhirinovsky is a Trumpian blowhard.
You said that earlier. How much did the communists gain?
They gained about 7 points. They were polling around 11% in the last election. And they're going to get 18 or 19 this time.
So probably some movement from the LDP to communists, yeah. Right? Somewhere in that.
Most LDP voters would not vote for the communists.
I mean, normally.
Most of that comes from United Russia.
Okay.
Yeah, that comes from the drop in United Russia.
Okay.
Right? They were higher. They had a higher majority.
How much did they lose?
They lost about 7 or 8 points.
Oh, okay, there you go. I gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, perhaps again. Spravod Levaya. So LDPR also did a few points worse. Spravod Levaya, that is a fair Russia, the Social Democratic Party,
right.
They did a few points higher. They usually had just crossed the 5% threshold, and they're looking at about 7.5 on a par with LDPR. So they picked up a couple percentage points there.
Yep.
Yep. And then now there's a new – it looks like we have a new party in the Duma. And this is Novi Ludi or New People. And I would best describe them as in American terms, as a libertarian pop culture populist party.
Young people, computer literate.
Yeah, a lot of – okay, so – how they did determining the top people to run on their party list is they had a reality TV show.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, there we go, right? Yeah, right. They're pro small business.
Right.
So, you know, they're pro business. They also tend to the liberal side on a lot of social issues.
Right.
Not quite as far as American liberals, but, you know, a little bit more than the average Russian.
Kind of woke.
They're new. Yeah. I wouldn't say they're woke. I'd say they're kind of more like 1990s Bill Clinton liberals.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, which is a huge stretch from today's woke.
Right. No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so and it looks like they're just going to cross the threshold. They were started up in the past year by a former cosmetics company executive. There's I think pretty valid belief that they are a genuine kind of, I would say there are people who thought that a niche needed to be filled and people were encouraged to create a party filling an ideological niche.
Right.
They are what I would a Russian interpretation of a liberal party, which liberal in Russia means libertarian in the United States.
Right.
Understand that, Crestway. So that's why I say libertarian. But one that is, not pro, not backed by a Western government. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
they are not Western assets. Right. And it looks like they're just going to cross the 5% threshold.
That's interesting.
And then when you come, then that's it. No, the Party of Pensioners just finished like 3.2, slightly better, so on and so on. And the math generally adds up when you take a look at that there. On the individual mandates, United Russia was leading in 197 out of 225. They were wiping up. KPRF was ahead in 12, and then stretched out among the others. You also see a few other parties like Yabloko, which is a long-term liberal party that polls less than 1% nationally, but is anti-Navalny, by the way, because Navalny's not a real liberal.
Right.
Civic Platform, the Party of Growth, that's another neoliberal party, and Rodina, which is a nationalist party. They're going to win some a few individual mandates in there. So all in all, you're going to see probably close to 10 parties in the Russian Duma and a few independents,
right.
Which is a lot better than the U.S. Congress in terms of ideological spread there.
Greens in Congress, no libertarians in Congress, not of the 535 members.
So this is the second Russian election I voted in, right? I do not consider myself belonging to any particular of the major parties in Russia.
Right.
And I tend to assess on events and, particularly in the individual mandates, looking at the candidates. I voted for the United Russia mayor, Sergei Sobyanin, in the last a couple years ago, because, he's kind of a boring technocrat, but he's really done good things for the city. And I didn't he did well handling coronavirus even after I voted for him. And I didn't have anything to complain. He's building lots of parks.
Right.
And he's a huge expansion of the metro.
You vote based on merit?
Yeah.
What a concept.
I don't have a party line vote, right? I generally don't like United Russia as a party because they don't have a firm ideology. They tend towards more towards pragmatism and technocracy. Yeah. And there's way too much, I don't want to say oligarch because the oligarchs were all defeated, but, business interests that eke their way into the party. If they generally have an ideology, the dominant is moderately social conservative and moderately statist or leftish without being leftist, say De Gaullist if you want. And I like that, but I don't like that that is only the kind of unspoken ideology of the party. I would like to see United Russia personally split with all the pro-business people, toddling off to, this new Novi Ludi or something like that. That's why I'm not a firm United Russia voter.
Right. I
and there are plenty of United Russia candidates that on individual mandate I would vote against. And I decide each election whether I'll vote for them in the party list or not. Now, I would always consider voting for the communists.
Sure.
My wife is a member of the Communist Party of the Russian Federation. She's a businesswoman from the Crimea who is she's also been an election supervisor, by the way, for the communists. So actually, working, in volunteer capacity for the party.
An opposition monitor, basically, right? I mean, it's an opposition monitor, right? In other words...
No, you're actually conducting the elections.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I'm saying it inside opposition monitor.
Yeah. Running because the election... Here's the way. Elections in Russia, there's a lot more voting stations than there is in the United States.
So it's easier.
Basically, every school becomes an election place, and there's a lot more schools because class sizes are smaller here, right?
Yeah.
For instance, where I vote is a less than 5-minute walk from my house. I never have to wait in line. There's one table whose entire job, one woman sitting behind it. The election ran for 3 days this time, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and there was online voting for the first time. Because of the coronavirus, it was initiated and it will probably hang on. I could have voted that way. I kind of like the ritual. Never have to wait in line because there's one woman whose entire job for 3 days is to manage the votes of two buildings, two 17-story apartment buildings. So there's no line. And that's generally the same across the country. We don't have lines here.
Oh, right? No. I got to tell you, Mark, we're out of time. We'll continue the conversation tomorrow. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.